This podcast may contain language that is not appropriate to all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. We also give you all the spoilers and let you know the ins and outs of everything that happens in this show where we go over the Christmas house. So if you want to watch it and not know what happens, just pass on this one and we'll see you next time.
Are you ready for one dry kiss?
Christmas's house with an extra syllable in there. Corinne, why am I singing this ridiculous song?
Well, I believe it's because we are going to be doing the movie The Christmas House. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, bringing the jingle jangle to your July. It's a Hallmark romance movie recap podcast. Hosted by the singularly sensational Tamara Cozio. Woo!
Along with the flexible fingered force of nature, Corinne Edding. Why do I say that? Because she did all kinds of little hand stylings when we were doing our intro clap that just intimidated the hell out of me. Corinne, your fingers are fabulous.
You know, I was going to be a hand model, but I decided to give it up for the life of podcasting. This is the cross I must bear.
And we're all the better for it. Thank you, Corinne, for your sacrifice. Thank you.
So how are you feel? Like, this is our second Christmas in July. The weather outside is nice and balmy. How are you? Are you
it's
ready?
It's a balmy 83 degrees in my apartment. I just turned on the AC, much to the arguments of my roommates, because it's fucking expensive to run an AC in the middle of the day. But I win, and I am not as uncomfortable as I was 10 minutes ago.
Well, it was foggy and overcast here for the first part of the day, so it's actually nice and cool in my apartment.
It's the Bay Area! Bay Area!
And so the thing about the beauty of Christmas in July is that you can be like, it is so fucking hot outside, let's watch some cool snow and just like get that chill out vibe feeling, right?
And be pissed off and bitter about it because I have so much boob sweat it's running down my belly. Like, yeah, no, that's exactly. Oh, it looks so cool and just so refreshing and boob sweat. Boob sweat. I have mittens. I put them under my boobs.
Boob sweat. See, you're using mittens. Christmas in July.
Yeah, keeping on track with the Christmas in July. But I am really, really excited that we're doing Christmas House. It's a movie that I've been wanting to do for a really long time. And I am glad that we're covering it today. But there's a lot going on.
Oh, yeah. That's why when you were first like, let's do the Christmas House. And I was like, okay, I'm not opposed to it. But I think we need to wait until we get a little further in and get a little more experienced with doing this before we dive into that one. Because there's a lot going on.
So I hope we don't regret it. I feel like we're in a good place to do it. I hope we do it justice. And it always put me in mind, like when we were doing the title, I kept thinking like Brick House by the Commodores,
Christmas House.
It's mighty, mighty.
Santa in the...
All the decorations come out. It's a Christmas house. Dun, 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 dun.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I know. The things that go on in my head. It's really, really a special place up here in this noggin of mine.
I like it. I love your creative song stylings.
Thanks. That's why we're friends.
I've never been known to do any creative song stylings myself, so...
Yeah, you need to get on board with that, Corinne. I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
Get more song stylings. I'll work on that. Thank you for the coaching. I appreciate it.
No problem.
You're a really good friend. Do you have a synopsis for us today, Miss Tamara?
I sure do. Mike Mitchell, played by Robert Buckley, has everything going for him. A successful TV show, a rockin' body, and a close family, who incidentally call him a few weeks before Christmas. They are doing the Christmas house this year and need his help. The Christmas house is a Mitchell family tradition where they decorate as if the spirit of Christmas hurled all over their house and yard. Ugh. They do it for the neighborhood and the kids to spread holiday cheer. No surface is left untouched. They haven't done it in years, but Mike agrees to come home because it'll give him the chance to see his brother Brandon, played by Jonathan Bennett, Brandon's husband Jake, played by Brad Harder, and his love interest, the beautiful neighbor who he's been pining over for years, Andy Cruz, played by Ana Ayora. But not all is as it seems at the Christmas house. Secrets are kept and problems are bubbling under the surface. Will this be the last time the family gets to do the Christmas house or gets to be a family at all? Will Mike finally share his feelings with the beautiful Andy? And will it be a magical Christmas in more ways than one?
Oh.
Find out with us as we take you down the street to visit the Christmas house.
Nice.
Thanks.
Magical Christmas in more ways than one down the street. Oh, you're good.
Shh. Yep. Don't spoil the secret. Do you have some fun facts for us, Corinne?
Yes, I do. They are select.
Lay it on me.
They're only about men, and we're just going to do it.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Robert Buckley, who plays the male lead in Christmas House, who is a hottie. He kind of looks like a Ken doll. Just saying. I don't know. Hair's a little darker. And he also doesn't have a molded nether region, but... Anywho.
That we know of.
He executive produced The Christmas House and worked on the story. It's somewhat based on his own family's personal Christmas traditions.
Wow.
I know. I have so many questions for him. And I bet you if his family did a Christmas house, it was decorated better than this one was.
Yeah.
He also was in one of my favorite TV shows playing the character of Major Lily White in iZombie.
Oh, I knew that. I saw that and I thought of you. I was like, oh my God, Corinne's going to love this.
I love it. And now we will talk about the best part of this movie, Jonathan Bennett, or as I like to call him, eyebrows. And he's got really bushy, dark brown eyebrows, and I am an aficionado of the thick eyebrow look, particularly on guys. I am here for it. Just send those huge brows my way, please.
Yeah, his eyebrows are working for him, definitely.
Yes. And Brad Harder, they play Brandon and Jake, the gay couple in the movie. Both of the actors are gay in real life, which is awesome.
Yes. Oh, I was like, they play gay so well.
They are
That's
gay.
Because they are. Okay. Oh. Making so much sense now.
Mm-hmm. In an interview I heard with Jonathan Bennett, he talked about how all the people who helped make the movie happen cried and clapped after their first kiss was filmed, which was really sweet.
I would have liked to be in that room with them while they do the kissing and be the director. Be like, I'm sorry, you're going to have to do that again.
Slower.
Okay, one more time.
Longer.
Yep. Yeah.
Deeper.
Again.
Again. Spoiler alert. Except not much of one due to Hallmark movies pretty much having happy endings in all things. In the end scene, when they show Brandon and Jake with their son, it's Brad Harper's actual son, guy who plays Jake.
Aww.
Yes.
He is a cute baby then.
Yes.
Aww.
So he's married and he and his hubs apparently have at least one child together. So super cute.
Nice. Nice little personal touch there.
I know. And that is the end of my fun facts.
Your fun facts were fucking fabulous today. Well done.
Thank you. Are you ready to take us on the magical journey that is the Christmas house?
I will try. Sing me out, Corinne. Yeah. In one of the most festive courtrooms I've ever seen, a handsome lawyer is giving his argument to the judge and jury. There are Christmas lights strung behind the judge's stand. There is garland and ornaments flanking the jury box as the jurors inside look on in awe. A teary woman sitting at the counsel table dabs her eyes with a handkerchief. And fucking really honest question, Corinne, do you think they decorate courtrooms for Christmas like this?
Okay, so I think probably in a few places they do, but really for the most part, I think that they would try and keep the whole holiday season out of the courtroom in particular, since it should be a neutral place. But I do think that it is required during the Christmas holiday season for all bailiffs to dress up as Santa Claus.
Okay, So it's like, happy holidays. It could be potentially the worst day of your life, but you hear you need to sit on this bailiff's lap while he swears you in.
Yes!
That's a good look. That is a great look. Yeah, I was just like taken back. I'm like, of all the Hallmark places that you probably wouldn't see decorations, a courtroom would be high on my list.
Yes.
It was festive as heck.
Anyways. It was actually the most tastefully Christmas thing in that movie, I would say.
It was tastefully done, and you see those decorations over and over again throughout the movie.
Tammy has them geotagged, so she knows when they've been moved from place to place.
And like, obviously, this town in Hallmarkville only has these color ornaments because they're in every single house and every single courtroom and every single storefront. My client was framed, the lawyer continues. The opposing counsel objects. The judge tells him he is on thin ice, and the lawyer apologizes. But wait a second. I forgot to tell you about the evidence we found in the prosecutor's office. An audible gasp fills the air as people dolly in boxes and boxes listed Exhibit A, B, C, D, all the way to X, Y, and Z. The lawyer approaches the bench and hands the judge the thinnest folder of findings. Whoever had to paraphrase those boxes of findings to fit in that little slip of a folder must have been an editing genius, that's all I'm saying. But the judge opens the folder, glances at it very briefly, nods, and says, "This case is dismissed," as she bangs her gavel.
Yay!
Christmas bells play in the background as the lawyer hugs his client. She gushes that her name is cleared and she'll be able to make it home in time for Christmas. The lawyer accepts her praise and says, "Oh yeah, one more thing, counsel. You're out of order." Just then, a title flashes across the bottom of the screen. It reads, "Handsome Justice." Why, we've been watching a TV show this whole time. And I was actually semi-duped for the first couple of seconds of the show because we were able to watch it together during our friendcation. And when you put it on and I watched this, I'm like, I think you put it on Hallmark Mysteries accidentally, Corinne. This doesn't seem like Christmas House.
She was like, this can't be real. I was like, it's not.
Maybe it was all the decorations that gave it away. I don't know. I don't know. The camera pans out and we see that we are actually in a screening room where all the cast and crew are watching the season finale of Handsome Justice. Even the screening room is decked out for the holidays. There are Christmas trees, ornaments, and garland interwoven around the screen and rows of leather chairs. An attractive redheaded woman in a blue blazer, surprised it's not green or red, gets up and addresses the crowd. "Thanks, everyone, for the hard work. We're wrapping for the holiday, but we will be back to work in the new year. And please ask Santa to pick us up for another season." "Mike," she says to the man sitting in the front row, who is the handsome lawyer in the show, "do you want to say something and turn down a captive audience?" he says playfully. "Never." He gets up and talks about what a privilege it was working on the show with everyone and how they are all family now, doing something really special together. With such a close and dedicated cast and crew, that show will probably be on the air for years. Nope, because next we see Mike and Blazer Lady talking in the hallway outside. They stop amidst a stream of exiting people, and she shares that although their ratings are really good, they may not be picked up for another season. Mike is confused. They almost beat that Pet Detective show.
Oh, well, that says a lot.
But there are new executives in charge, and they may want to shake things up a bit. "Is there anything we can do?" he asks. "Pray for a Christmas miracle," she says, seriously. "And by the way, try to keep this under wraps. I don't want anyone to know yet, even though I'm speaking about it in a regular voice right outside the screening room as the cast and crew passes by."
Shh. Secrets.
And can probably hear if they're paying a scotch of attention everything I'm saying. But shh.
I really think that this movie, instead of The Christmas House, should have been called Shh. Secrets.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of secrets throughout this movie.
Oh, yeah. It would be equally fitting. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Mike, melancholy from the news about the likelihood of his show being canceled, goes to the courtroom set and takes a picture. The room is dark, lit by a single light. There are sheets covering the gallery seating, and the Christmas wreaths are still up from the episode they just shot. Suddenly, he gets a video call from his mom and dad. They let him know that they're planning on doing The Christmas House this year, and they need him home stat to help. He says, "You're out of order." No, he actually says, "Love you guys, but it usually takes us a full month to set it up, and you want to get it done in 2 weeks?" Dad says, "Your brother and his husband are flying in tomorrow to help. please just humor us and come on home. Not to be outdone by his brother, he changes his flight to the next day and says he'll do it.
I just have to say that his parents were like working that. They had one of those camera ring lights that like flash beautiful light onto your face when you're on the phone.
They didn't have a ring light.
Well, they sure did.
Well, they were lit for the movie, but they didn't have a ring light like visible within their laptop screen.
Beg to differ.
I think you're just like making your own Christmas in July wish list. Ring light for myself so I can always be beautiful in video calls.
You're on to me.
The next day, we're in a small town airport, and Brandon and his husband Jake are on the tarmac walking towards the airport. Brandon looks down at his phone and lets Jake know that there's no new news. Has anyone ever died from suspense? He says to Jake. Jake responds with a non-answer. You sure you don't want to tell your family? But Brandon doesn't want to. He has enough on his hands dealing with his own expectations and emotions. He doesn't need to be dealing with his family's as well. What are they talking about? Shh. Secrets.
I know, but I won't say anything.
They enter the airport and hear a familiar voice saying, "You're out of order." As they watch Mike try to leverage his fame to curry favor with the lost luggage lady. She's not impressed, nor can she make his luggage magically appear. So she lets him know that he can be on his way, as she's already put an alert in the system. Brandon and Jake watch the spectacle with their pocket popcorn out. And as soon as Mike is done, they leap behind him. Brandon says, "Oh my gosh, it's Clint Handsome. Can we have a selfie?" Mike turns, they all hug, and they actually do a selfie, which surprised me. Mm-hmm. Mike turns to Jake. "Are you ready for this?" The Christmas house is not for the faint of heart. Every space indoors and out is made over. Brandon continues. There are twinkle lights, animatronic Santas, and Mom, well, she can be a bit of a drill sergeant. Jake looks bemused. "I'm here for it. Now let's get the rental car." Suddenly, long dormant sibling rivalry has woken up to this bright wintry day. And it's ready to rumble. Mike and Brandon race through the airport to the car rental place as a piece from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker plays in the background. Mike and Brandon race through the airport to the car rental place to be the first one to get to the car. Chaos ensues as Mike pushes Brandon, making a break for it. Brandon gets stuck behind a waist-high partition, makes a feeble attempt to vault over it, decides better of it, and goes around, deciding it's better to let Mike win than cause an even bigger scene. He lets Mike dash off to the car rental place so they can get home.
The guys pull up to a pale yellow craftsman-style house with white trim. There is snow on the ground. They are greeted by their mom and dad with hugs all around. After the warm welcome, Mike goes up to his childhood bedroom to unpack his imaginary luggage, because it was lost. He looks nostalgically at a picture in a frame. It's him as a kid, dressed as a magician with a cute long-haired girl in a red dress standing by his side. He has a flashback, back, which I won't go into. I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
He has a flashback, of the two of them performing a magic trick on the stage way back in the day. The dynamic duo, his mom says as she enters. Yes, Mike agrees. We have come a long way since then. Thank God, he whispers under his breath. But his mom hears and says, I was always so proud of you. It took guts to get up there and perform all those tricks. She's back in town, you know. She came home after the divorce. Mike changes the subject by picking up something on the bed. Hey, what's Dad's watch doing here? Oh, that. His mom takes it dismissively. He's always leaving that thing everywhere. She puts her hands on Mike's shoulders and says tenderly, I am so glad you're here. Mike agrees and turns back to return the frame onto his desk when he hears, PREEP! His mom has blown a whistle in the doorway. Family meeting pronto, she yells down the stairs. Shit is about to get real.
Ooh. Christmas Sergeant Mom addresses her husband, two sons, and son-in-law, who are all piled on the same couch. "Gentlemen," she says, locking them into the room, "we are all gathered here in the name of Christmas and in the name of house, specifically this one. The timeline is tighter, the decorations are dusty, but we are going to make it happen." She passes out detailed categorized lists and then points to Dad. "You're on, soldier." Dad turns on the TV and pulls out his laptop. Suddenly, a PowerPoint presentation is playing.
"What?"
Brandon is shocked. "Who taught Dad PowerPoint?" Dad snappily replies, "The library. It's more than just books. Thanks, Dad." Because it is. And then he smoothly transitions to narrating over the PowerPoint. Pictures of Christmas decorations, animated schematics, and lists fill the screen while the little drummer boy plays dramatically in the background. "Come, they told me, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum." In the beginning, it was nothing but a dream. When inspired by the Hudson Holiday House tours, "a newborn king to see, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum," and the desire to wow everyone with our Christmas stylings, "our finest gifts we bring." And all of this would not be possible without the organizational prowess of "to lay before the king."
Oh. Well, I totally did not pay any attention to the songs that were playing in the background, and now I'm really sad about it.
Because it wasn't. I made it all up.
Oh my god. I was like, I didn't even notice that song. You didn't notice it because it wasn't there except anywhere except in Corinne's mind.
And the Tchaikovsky during the airport was true. The little drummer boy is not.
So I just thought you were really on your music shit more than I was, because I knew the Tchaikovsky and I was like, oh man, I didn't even remember the drummer boy.
No, because it wasn't there.
Ow. That was such good intertwined storytelling. So jealous.
Too late. "To lay before the king, pa rum pa pum pum, rum pa pum pum, rum pa pum pum, mom!" The song fades out, but the slideshow isn't over. Mom lays out the plan while a home makeover style animation shows before and afters of what the interior of the house will look like after it's been transformed. No more couches, rugs, bookshelves. Instead, rooms are filled with Christmas trees, animatronic Santas, and choo-choo trains. After Mom is finally done and we've been bestowed with Hallmark Christmas tree buying tip number 47, a sturdy limb is perfect to trim. Brandon, ever the little brother, says, "Will Majestic Mike be performing?" As he elbows Mike, Mike says, "That's a no." And the family is finally released from the room and they brace themselves for a very busy tomorrow. The Christmas rundown. A train room. Multiple 6-foot-plus Christmas trees in the living spaces. Creepy animatronic Santa. Fake snow carpeting the house. 12 dozen of each type of cookie. Perfectly fluffed garlands. Apparently Mike is an expert. And snowflakes hanging from the ceiling. It sounds like it's gonna be a Christmas wonderland in their house, but will it?
Doesn't Fluffer have a different description and a different type of movie?
Yeah.
Just curious. Because you're saying Mike's a good Fluffer, and I'm like, oh.
Yes, he is. Oh. It's the next morning, and we can hear Mom talking to someone in the kitchen. They're sitting off screen at the dining room table. We have a full view of the kitchen, a tastefully white kitchen with blue countertops, with warm hardwood floors and a shabby chic kitchen island. Mike comes downstairs and into the kitchen, yawning with his back to the dining room and asking for coffee. He's dressed in some of his old clothes from high school, ones he wore before he started working out. His short-sleeved shirt looks like it's hermetically sealed to his body, and I'm not complaining.
Yeah, it does. Oh, he wore the shit out of that shirt. Oh my god.
I was like, the Spice Girls want you to join them on their tour, and yes, please.
If you want to be my lover, Mike.
Oh. and his sweatpants are tight and high waters. Mom is sitting off to the side at the dining room table and tries to get his attention, but it doesn't work. Then the person she was talking to says, "Mike Mitchell, you've gone totally Hollywood." He slowly turns his head from the fridge, mortified. It's his childhood crush, Andy. All grown up and looking awesome. She's got long dark brown hair, a killer smile, and she has a look of, oh, this just made my morning on her face.
It made all of our morning.
I would have just been like, snap, snap, snap. Like, let me just take a little picture here and there.
Well, don't get his attention yet, Mom. I gotta get a couple of pictures of the backside before he turns around.
For real. Speaking of Mom, throughout this movie, I only refer to the parents as Mom and Dad because that's all they're called.
Me too.
So included.
It says it briefly in one part, but I'm like, no, Mom and Dad.
It's just way too brief. So when the mom is talking to Andy, she's the mom. When the dad is talking, he's the dad. Andy responds, "Nice outfit." He tugs down his shirt, which was showing a bit of his midriff, and says, "The airline lost my luggage. So what are you doing here?" I swear he had to get helped into that shirt. I don't know how else he could have been squoze into that shirt. It was so freaking tight. His mom interrupts. Andy is back next door living with her mom and son. Her son is actually at my old school. If I'd stayed one more year, I could have been his principal. Mike trying to cover his outfit, making it worse by throwing a ridiculous Santa apron on, which was all red, had a large black belt painted on it, and had a fluffy white boa trim on the top of it. I'm like,
How he thought that was better is beyond me.
I was just like, no, if you're embarrassed, just take off your clothes. It's fine.
Don't cover it with the sexy Santa apron.
No, because it's not sexy. No.
I mean, it was like kind of a, I don't know.
Is there a little something? Do you have a little sexy Santa fetish going on here that I don't know?
There's no role playing in this house where I'm Mrs. Claus making cookies. It burns them, but has to be punished because I'm very, very bad. There's none of that going on here.
No, none of that. Of course. What was I thinking?
It's like you don't even know me.
Andy looks at his mom with a bemused expression. "If you hadn't retired, who would have overseen the Christmas house? I'm here for it." Mike, unable to make eye contact with her due to the sheer embarrassment of it all, says, "Well, great seeing you, but I gotta run, change clothes into anything but this." And he edges his way out the door. As soon as he's left, his mom and Andy burst into laughter. As well they should.
Yeah. Mike is back in his childhood room in normal clothes, and he sees Andy on the porch outside having a sweet moment with their son. Little hearts start forming in his eyes when he hears, "Bleep!" It's Mom and her whistle. "Hustle up, Buttercup. Dad is all ready to go into town to get the truck." They leave. And later we see Mike and his dad walking down the bustling downtown streets reminiscing. They talk about why they're bringing back the Christmas house. Mike thinks it's sudden when they're usually such planners, and Dad kind of dances around the question and asks him just to go with it and try to make it special. Dad admits that things have been kind of challenging this year for Mom with retirement and all the changes, and in the distance they see a theater company. And Dad says, "I remember when you performed there and wouldn't stop taking curtain calls. I should have known then that you would be an actor." And Mike asks, "Hey, is Andy's mom still running that place?" Dad says, "Yes, and she is so proud that one of her actors now has his very own TV show." Mm-hmm. A little hiccup dances across Mike's eyes. "Must keep the secret. Must keep the secret." "Oh, yeah. I saw Andy this morning. So, does she come around the house very often?" "Who's asking?" Dad says. "You or Majestic Mike. Ooh. You know, I'm really surprised you guys didn't stay in touch. You share a lot of history." Back at the house, the guys are loading up the truck with furniture. Gotta clear out the parents' house for the festivities. Mike and Brandon are hauling a table, complaining about how heavy it is, when Dad swoops in and smartly says, "Wow, I'm surprised you two are even talking at all. Before, you used to use all that energy to race to see who could move the most boxes." The sons lock eyes. They slowly put down the table. Brandon cracks his neck and lays down the terms. "Winner gets $20. Bring it," says Mike, and they race off. The competition is in... ding, 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 ding. Competition is in full swing when Andy shows up with a drink carrier of coffee for the family. She sees Mike, offers him a cup, and apologizes that it's not a fermented chia seed smoothie or whatever it is the celebrities are drinking nowadays. Chia seed smoothies are so last year, Mike jokes. Andy voices her disappointment that she is not seeing him in a too tight outfit from high school. Ugh. Aren't we all, Andy?
Yes.
Aren't we all? When a moving truck pulls up and Mike's family file out of the house, boxes in hand, Andy explains to them, I know I said it would help, but I thought this would make the day go much smoother. I hired movers to take care of the things so you all can enjoy your coffee while they do the heavy lifting. Andy needs to be my best good friend because that is a motherfucking gift that keeps on giving. I'm going to have to move and I need some Andys in my life. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Note from Tamara. Back to the show. Mom and Dad thank her and she says, oh, it's the least I can do for my new clients. Thank you so much for choosing me to put your house on the market. She stops when she sees the uncomfortable shifting they're doing and Mike asks, what? You guys are listing the house. Whoopsie. Andy let the cat out of the bag. Everything clicks in his head. Oh, that's why you're doing the Christmas house. This is the last time we'll be able to. He has so many questions. When were you going to tell us? When is this happening? Where are you going to go? The parents try to reassure him, even though they don't quite have all the answers themselves.
Shh, secret.
Tamara asks why the rush, but they don't answer me either. Instead, they go inside, and Andy says, don't be so hard on them, Mike. It's Christmas. And I say, I'm sorry, but it being Christmas does not give you a pass. In fact, it makes it worse that you are doing this at this time. I have very strong feelings.
Oh.
Mike thanks her for the coffee and the movers and leaves her and her ridiculous advice behind.
Please explain your strong feelings.
Because my strong feelings are you can't do something that's shitty and just be like, it's Christmas, you should get a pass. Christmas heals all wounds. Christmas rights every wrong. Christmas is like the balm that covers your soul when it is wounded and hurt.
What's the shitty thing that's happening?
That they're selling the house and didn't tell him. His childhood home. They're just like, surprise, just come home for Christmas house. We're going to decorate it. It's going to be amazing. By the way, we're selling the house. You know, me and losing your childhood home. Have deep, deep roots. So I know that I might be a little bit biased on the point. I apologize. Do not sell your childhood home without telling the people that have to live or move out of there or can never come back again.
They were going to tell them just later. Brandon stands in front of the open garage that is filled to the brim with rolled carpet, side tables, a couch, and boxes on boxes on boxes. Brandon asks Mike, who is standing in front of another moving van full of Christmas decorations, including what looks like a 6-foot-tall polar bear, if they can drop by the grocery store so he can get groceries for dinner. Mike is distracted, doesn't answer his question, but does say, my spidey senses are tingling. To mix metaphors, there is a disturbance in the force.
Ooh.
And it doesn't make sense for them to sell the house. Mike is obviously Team Tamara. Brandon disagrees.
Thank you.
Team Corinne.
Mm.
It's a lot of house. I don't really blame them. Why is this bothering you, Mike? Mike, obviously more sentimental than Brandon, says, duh, it's my childhood home. You don't feel weird about it being our last Christmas there? Says Tamara as well.
Thank you.
Brandon responds as Corinne, I love the house, but it's part of my past. I'm okay with letting it go to move fully forward into the present. Now a new family can make memories in it. You're like, intruders, intruders.
My lips have fully disappeared off my face because I am pressing them together so hard.
Mike scoffs. Okay, Zen Master Brendan, you're so wise and evolved. I get it. Brandon looks at him seriously. I'm so glad you recognize my genius. It's about time. I've got the wisdom of the ages. And if I can impart some of it to you, well, the world will be a better place. You want some more nuggets? Mike says, no, I'm good. Walks away and closes the moving truck door emphatically, ending the scene with a slam. Later, Mike is taking a before pic of the exterior of the house when a kid runs up behind him talking a mile a minute. Hey, you're on TV. I've seen it. Mike turns around with a smile on his face. Aw, it's so nice to meet a fan. He looks at the kid, who appears to be about 12 or so, has longer short hair that covers his ears, wears wire-rimmed glasses, a giant blue jacket, and has a big burgundy backpack on. The kid says, "Well, I wouldn't say that." Just then, Andy comes along behind the kid and introduces him as her son, Noah. "He's just playing it cool. He loves your show." Noah looks at her resentful that she called him out. Inside his head, he thinks, "Payback's a bitch." With his mouth, he busts out with the fact that she always thought there was something special about Mike. Andy tries to play it off, and Mike, feeling more comfortable, pulls out his pocket popcorn and starts munching away. Andy says, "Yeah, I don't think I said that." Noah responds, "Yeah, you did. When we were watching his show last week, you totally said it. And then you got a faraway look in your eyes and shook your head knowingly back and forth and said, 'Ah, there was always something special about him.'" Blushing, Andy tries to play it off. "He must have been thinking about someone else." Mike swallows some popcorn and says amiably, "Must have been that other person from our high school with the TV show."
That was a good one.
Yeah. Noah is insistent. "No, she was talking about you." Andy shifts the topic. "I told him about how you were Majestic Mike and I was Awesome Andy, and we would perform magic together." Noah perks up at this. "Do you still do magic?" he says hopefully. "Oh, this magic. It's perhaps something that Tamara foreshadowed earlier."
Maybe. Maybe magical in more than one way.
Oh. Mike sassily responds, "Not since my stage partner quit on me." Andy quickly retorts, "Retired." Mike says, "Eh." Agree to disagree. They all say goodbye to each other and agree to meet up tomorrow to pick up trees. Next, we find ourselves in the kitchen with Brandon and his mom. She's using a flour sifter to sprinkle powdered sugar on cookies. Brandon has a flashback to her teaching him how to make cookies as a kid. It's clear that one of the ways they bonded was through creating tasty food together. She has made rosettes and he approves. Brandon says, "I have them on the menu at my bakery as a tribute to you. They're delicious." Mom gets a faraway look in her eyes. "Maybe I can visit you and Jake in Denver after Christmas." Brandon says, "Yeah, you and Dad are always welcome." But Mom drops that she wants to visit Brandon and Jake without Dad.
Shh.
Secrets.
Ooh.
Brandon responds, totally oblivious. "Oh, like a girl's trip. Yeah, you're welcome anytime." And he gives her a hug. It's the next day, and there are giant red crates filled with Christmas decor all over the house. Brandon, Jake, and Dad are in the living room with Christmas Sergeant Mom as she blows her whistle and pulls out her clipboard. She lets them know that Mike and Andy are at the tree lot. She is all business. And she lets Brandon and Jake know that they will be working on the exterior while Dad should do the invitations, as he always likes being out there socializing. Zing, Mom. Zing. Mom lets everyone know she's organizing the inside decor and that ornaments will be hung that evening. "Now get out there and make Christmas happen," she orders as she blows her whistle, and they all scuttle out of the room to do their respective tasks.
I was so surprised when I first watched this, because when the way she's talking about her husband or dad, I was like, "He's cheating! He's cheating on her! Oh my God!" Like the socializing and the things that she's hinting towards. But then I'm like, does cheating ever happen in Hallmark movies? I don't think it does.
There are definitely emotional affairs going on, but as far as bow chicka bow bow affairs, bow chicka bow bow doesn't actually happen in Hallmark movies. Mm. So
Hallmark does not cross that line. They don't cross that line.
Nope.
All right. Okay, well, get your bingo cards out, folks, because here is a quintessential Christmas tree farm, which you see in so many Hallmark Christmas movies. Andy, Mike, and Noah are out doing the very important task of finding the perfect Christmas tree, or rather, four of the perfect Christmas trees. They're weaving between the Christmas trees with Noah running ahead, pointing out all the good ones. And off to the side is a freaking hot cocoa stand. And why have I never, ever in my life come across a hot cocoa stand? Corinne, you? Cocoa stand?
Christmas in the Park in San Jose has a hot cocoa stand.
Oh, yes. I was like, I'm not talking about Starbucks, but yes, yes. Okay.
It is the closest I would say, other than like particular neighborhoods that have spectacular lights, it's the closest that we have to a hokey Hallmark kind of thing in the Bay Area.
I loved Christmas in the Park.
I didn't see it until I was in high school, so I did not have nostalgic memories of it. I was like, what is this broke down place? This is not magical like I was expecting it to be.
Oh, I saw it in its heyday and I was probably like in elementary to middle school. Uh-huh. And it was like a good mom memory because we go to the Christmas in the Park and walk around and see all the animatronics and the lights and the trains and whatnot. And then we would go to Original Joe's, which is like a staple in downtown San Jose. Yeah. And either have dinner or hot cocoa or some special drink. So.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Fond memories of Christmas in the Park. If you haven't gone, I don't know if it's broke down anymore, but I would definitely give it a look-see if you're in the Bay Area.
Look, my parents, was that a museum? No. So my parents weren't going to be taking me there. What's educational about it? No, not educational.
There's joy. Joy. Joy is educational. Joy, joy, joy. Anyways, as Andy and Mike walk, they talk about LA and home. Andy said she was surprised by his reaction to his parents' decision to sell the house, since he hasn't lived there in a really long time. He agrees that it was unexpected, but he likes to feel like he has a home base and a place to come back to if he ever needs it. I feel that so hard, Tamara says. Andy agrees. That is why she moved back after the divorce. It felt safe here. People knew me and care about me, and now Noah can experience and enjoy all the same things I did growing up. She continues, tell me all about the glamorous parties you go to. Parties, he scoffs. No, I'm in bed early and wake up early for ridiculous call times. I also have a personal trainer that does not care if I want a personal life. She said samesies, except my personal trainer is my son, but I'm also early to bed and rise with zero social life. Do you ever wonder, he asks, what all the hustle is for? Noah pops up from behind a tree and says, I think I found another good one. It's for him, Andy says, and they go off to see his perfect tree.
Aww.
Until Mike's phone rings. It's the producer with the blazer. He says, I hope you have good news, but she doesn't. She is walking on a treadmill in the most curious workout gear that I have ever seen,
ooh,
which includes a bright pink blazer with matching pink slacks, because you can't really tell what the material is, but
she's at work.
I have heard business.
Professional.
Is she at work?
Yeah.
I thought she was at home.
No.
Because it was the holiday and they were on break. That's why they braked, because they were breaking for the show, so they were going to resume next year.
She's in her office.
Okay. Well, I have heard of business casual, but I have not heard of business cardio. She can at least take that off when she's exercising. I'm just saying.
I see. You want to get her naked.
Trying to get her naked. I'm just saying, like, at least take off the blazer while you're walking on the treadmill. At least the blazer. She cannot let go of that blazer. I think she's got like a blazer security blanket.
Aww. Maybe it's got little pieces of her blankie from childhood sewn inside.
I know nothing about that. She's calling because the show's been canceled, but she is not taking it lying down. Her and her blazer are going to go down to New York to convince the network to renew them for another season. Oh, do you think they'll change their mind? Mike asks. And the producer lady with the blazer puffs, anything is possible. It is Christmas after all. He hides the news from Andy and Noah as they continue on their Christmas tree quest. Back at the house, Mom picks up an ornament that says Bill and Phyllis, a.k.a. the parents, Mom and Dad. She has a flashback of when she received it one Christmas years ago when Bill presented it to her. And you can tell it's years ago in the flashback because the scene is in really soft focus. She opens the ornament and exclaims, it's beautiful. And Bill looks at her and says, so are you. They kiss, and a much younger version of Mike and Brandon say, ew, in the background. She is snapped back to reality by the guys entering with the Christmas trees and looks a little sad as Mike says, hey, I remember that ornament. Dad gave it to you. You have to hang it because Christmas doesn't start until you hang the first ornament. Mom hands it off to him and says, have at it. She's passing the buck and the responsibility to him. He says, well, no pressure there. Finds the perfect branch and hangs it up. Mom nods and says, okay. That's the family tree. Then that one, she motions to another one in the corner, will be the snowflake tree, and that one will be the toy tree. Every tree has a theme. Oh. She ushers Noah off to help her find the ornaments, but not before directing Mike and Andy to fluff the garland. because they're good fluffers. They hop to it, and Andy says, at least she didn't blow that whistle, as a whistle trills in the background. Mike whispers, we gotta take that thing away from her, as he pulls out the storage container full of garland and says, pro tip. In the thousands of hours of doing this, I realized the best garlic fluffing method is to pull every branch on the way down. Pull one left, pull one right, pull one up, and then pull one down. That way you have uniform fluffage. Just then Andy's phone rings. It's a client that wants to view a house. She has to leave, but Mike thinks it's a clever ruse to get out of garland fluffing. She retorts, you're not as pompous as I thought you'd be, and luckily I find it charming. He raises his eyebrows intrigued when she adds, oh, shoot, I just remembered. I have to take Noah. My mother's at the library volunteering right now. Leave him here, Mike offers. We can put him to work like a little elf. What self-respecting Christmas house doesn't have an elf?
Aw.
She agrees and hurries off to take care of business.
Although Mike is the king of garland fluffers. He hates it.
Fluffer, 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 fluffers.
And so when his dad walks by with the train set, he asks to help. The answer is yes. But sadly, Mike, fake garlands don't fluff themselves, Mike. So the task will be waiting for him later, Mike. Sorry, Mike.
Are you talking to Mike? Is this a message for Mike?
I don't know what you're talking about. No, no.
That's bang up writing right there.
Dad, Mike, and Noah are in the train room working on laying and decorating the track that runs around the outer edge of the room. And Noah is eyeing Majestic Mike's traveling caravan train car. Dad says, you know, Noah, there was a day when Majestic Mike and your mom, Awesome Andy, put on the most incredible magic shows. Not only did they perform at birthdays during the year, but people would come from miles around to see them perform in front of the Christmas house. Mike tempers his dad's enthusiasm a bit, saying, they were here for the Christmas house, not for the magic. But Noah hears none of Mike's nonsense and looks transfixed at the dad. Do you think I could learn magic? He says in a hushed tone. Dad gets a conspiratorial tone to his voice. It might be possible, but you really need to work hard. Noah is excited. I can work hard, Dad continues. You'll also need to practice a lot. I'm the best practicer around, says Noah. Dad looks over at Mike. What do you think, Mike? Does he have the calling? Which is not a cult. Don't worry, people. We're not going to get Noah into a cult. Mike looks at Noah. Only people with magicians' hearts know. Noah looks a little worried as he does his personal inventory, but he hears the thump, thump of his heart from excitement. Figures that's close enough and says, yeah, my heart. It totally says I'm a magician. 100. Mike says he'll coach him, and Dad says he'll need a cape. Why do you need a cape? Why in this day and age do you need a cape? It's the worst. Noah is thrilled. Yes, a cape. I totes need a cape. Oh, Noah, I just rolled a 20 with my D&D die, and it said you were 100% that nerd. This has got to be the nerdiest Hallmark subplot I've ever encountered, and I'm here for it because it's just weird. He wants to do close-up magic with a cape. Follow that bliss, Noah. Follow that bliss. I totally think that people should follow their nerdy hearts. I'm here for that. I just hate magic. I think it all started with those disappointing magic kits that kids got. I looked at one of those and I was like, this is garbage. This is all just garbage. And then seeing like a magician disappear at the Disneyland castle. And I was like, no, I don't believe. I don't believe.
You just don't have a magician's heart, Corinne. That's all there is to it.
I don't. Hate to break it to you. Do you?
I have a magician's corazón.
Oh! You start like performing up close magic on me. You're like, look! And all these coins start coming from my ear. I'm like, do that with $100 bills, please. Next, we're at one of the most tender Hallmark scenes I've seen. Brandon and Jake are decorating the exterior of the house at night. Their work is lit by the glow of Christmas tree lights all around them. Jake gazes with a mixture of fondness and excitement at Brandon. They're facing each other, and Jake says, next year, we're going to be decorating our house as a family of three. Brandon smiles back and says with a tinge of longing, I hope so. Jake excitedly responds, I can't wait. Did you hear back from the agency? Brandon's face shuts down and he snaps, don't you think I would have told you if I had?
Yeah.
Jake is broken out of his whimsy and turns away to head back towards the house. Brandon stops him, grabbing his hand. Jake turns around and they are staring at each other earnestly, lit by the warm, soft light of Christmas lights. Brandon does something that I haven't recently seen in a Hallmark movie. As a man, he apologizes. I know. Women are always apologizing in Hallmark movies. Men, not so frequently. I'm sorry. I'm so worried about whether the adoption will go through, and I'm not around to see what's going on with the bakery reno. I love being with my family, but the timing isn't great. Jake's eyes soften. He looks at Brandon with love eyes and says, "It's so great that we're here away from our daily routine and work right now. We get to spend more time together than we normally would." Brandon looks at Jake with so much tenderness and heart eyes. Jake continues, "This will give us so many great memories and inspiration for when we celebrate Christmas with our kids." The Kiss tractor beam is on. And now it's time for a break.
Yes. No. 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 The Kiss tractor beam is on. You can't cock block me with the Kiss tractor beam. That's just not right.
I did. We're in Christmas in July right now, and in preparation for the full Christmas season between November and December, we are going to be creating Hallmark Christmas Bingo. Yes, you heard it here, folks. If you can think of some different Christmas tropes that are frequently in cheesy-ass Christmas movies, email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com so that we can put that Christmas note on
a Christmas bingo card.
We want your wisdom, people.
And also, we are going to be showing more of our stuff on social media, which is One Dry Kiss at Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. Corinne runs the Twitter. I run the Instagram and Facebook. What kind of things can they look forward to, Corinne, on Instagram that we should be posting in the near future?
I will tell you that I am ready for Christmas in July because I still have up my Christmas stockings. They make me feel good. They were never taken down from December.
And I'm going to share, even though I do not have Christmas decorations up anymore, I entered a Christmas stocking contest at my work where you had to create a Christmas stocking that reflected you and your personality. Ooh. And I won first place with my Christmas stocking that I lovingly called Chrismad instead of Christmas. So on social media, Instagram specifically, I will be sharing with you my Chrismad stocking. So if you want to see it, it is hilarious. So I will also be sharing that. So if you'd like to see it, please head over to our Instagram and Facebook and potentially Twitter.
I am so excited to see that stocking of yours. So exciting.
So again, like to see little snippets of our Christmas holidays and how we celebrated it throughout the years? Instagram. If you would like to contribute to our future bingo page for Christmas movie things that you see in every cheesy Hallmark Christmas movie, please reach out to us at
onedrykiss@gmail.com. Thank you so much for hanging in there with us through the break. When we were last listening to One Dry Kiss, Jake and Brandon had just made up. They were looking forward to spending Christmas with their kids. They were staring into each other's eyes. The Kiss tractor beam had flicked on. Their faces moved closer together. And they have a beautiful, sweet, lips extended kiss, saying with that kiss, "Damn, I love you and I'm so lucky to have you in my life." They pull apart and Brandon looks at Jake. "Do you think we'll do a Christmas house when we have kids?" Jake says, "Absolutely not." They smile softly at each other, rest their foreheads against each other affectionately, and we bask in our feels at that beautiful moment.
Such a good kiss. Such a good kiss. Ugh,
it was so nice. I was hoping they were going to go in for a second one. I was like, okay, they pulled apart. Are they going to go back? Are they gonna... No. But they did put their foreheads together, and it was so darn cute.
Sweet, sweet moment. Back in the kitchen, Dad picks up a Santa teapot and says, "Hey, honey, remember when we got this in the Berkshires when you were pregnant with Brandon?" She takes it from him, shakes her head, and corrects him. "No. That was the small reindeer figurine. We got this in that little shop in Annandale when I was pregnant with Mike." Oh, that was the last Christmas where it was just the two of us. All the kiddos are sitting around the dining room table, mesmerized at their parents' trip down memory lane. but no flashbacks. Dad doesn't get a flashback. He must have done something really bad. Mom sighs. I was so excited and proud, nervous and grateful for all the happiness that I was feeling. And that's why this teapot is so important. It's part of our history. And Tamara is starting to realize why they are such Christmas hoarders. Because they have real attachments and history with all these Christmas things. And they want to share that with others. Hence the Christmas house. And those down in Whoville, sometimes they say that Tamara's heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Oh, that's so cute. I love it. You have delighted me.
Delighted me. But, Mom says reminiscently, even though those things are important to me, sometimes the memories are ultimately all we have. She puts the teapot down sadly as everyone from the table looks on a little concerned. All right, she perks up. Let's eat while it's still warm. The next day, Mike is walking back into town. And he sees a bus bench ad with Andy Cruz's face. And across the way, an even bigger ad with Gail Reinbeck, realtor, just across from it. He is paying Andy a visit at work. He finds her place, which is a cute storefront with a big window facing the snowy street and all the freaking decorations you could possibly fit into a real estate office.
I love the turquoise and hot pink decor they have up. I think it's super cute.
Did it look a little familiar, though? Did it look a little familiar? Like a... Okay.
That's the only place where it is.
Okay.
Are you going to break my heart, Grinch?
No. Yeah. Completely original. Wow. Like a real unique take on Christmas decorations.
Well, no, of course it's not a unique take on Christmas decorations. I'm
just... Unique to the movie. Unique to the movie. Okay. Didn't see it anywhere else. Only in that place. Solamente real estate office.
I feel like that's not the truth now, and I need to know. Are you going to tell me Santa isn't real next? Are you? Because I don't know.
No, it's absolutely real. And he works at the court. You have to sit on his lap when you get sworn in here. Andy is surprised to see Mike, but he comes bearing gifts. Not for her, but for Noah. I recognize that case, she says with a smile on her face, but you could have just dropped it off at the house. And miss your face when you saw it? Ha! He puts his coat down as she informs him, you know, he's already asking about stage partners. Apparently there is this girl at his school that he wants to perform with him. Go, Noah, Mike says with a knowing look in his eyes. Actually, I was thinking about taking him to the magic shop. He notices Gail's flyer on Andy's desk, picks it up and asks about it. That's Andy's competition, and she is not too keen on Andy coming onto the scene and encroaching on her territory. I can help, Mike pops up. I can post something on my social media. Do you think that'll work? Andy asks. Well, I do have 1.2 million followers.
Almost as many as us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure, okay. She looks dubious, thanks him for the offer, but said she needs something more locally based. His phone rings, interrupting them. It's his agent, and he ducks away to take the call. When he returns, he shares that he was offered a commercial for Grift body spray. She's intrigued. He runs all the clever taglines by her.
Oh, I'm so excited.
When your body odor is out of order, use Grift body spray. You're out of order, but justice never smelled so good. What's my secret weapon in court? Grift body spray, and now in a new scent. Andy laughs, amused by the ridiculousness of it all, and he is happy to entertain and leaves on a good note, letting her get back to work.
The family is in the dining room, which has been transformed with garlands around the entryway, wreaths, and Christmas lights. Brandon has made an amazing meal, and Jake knows he's the luckiest man in the world, because not only does Brandon have thick, luscious brows, but he can also cook. Dad lets everyone know that Mike gave Noah his old magic kit. Brandon explains to Jake, when we were in high school, Andy broke Mike's heart. Mike protests, voice cracking, no, we're just friends. Brandon looks dubious. So you're helping out Noah because you and Andy are friends? You're not trying to get in her pants? Mike says, no pants, just friends. Jake says, see, he doesn't just play a nice guy on TV. He's actually one in real life. Mike hops onto that bandwagon. Thank you, Jake. I'm so glad you see the true me, unlike my ungrateful brother over there. Mike then wisely changes the topic. I actually wanted to let y'all know that the network canceled Handsome Justice, but I'm so glad to be here celebrating the holidays as a family. Everybody is sympathetic, and then they sympathetically dig into their meal. Okay, y'all, hold on to your hats. we're about to enter Marvelous Jim's Magic Shop.
You had some feelings about Marvelous Jim, didn't you?
Oh, they go right along with my magic feelings. Prepare yourself for sights you rarely see in Hallmark movies. Floor to ceiling clutter, a random sarcophagus, if you will. Christmas decor, twinkling caps, bright magic hats, the whole shebang. Noah and Mike enter, and Noah is immediately blown away. Mike, for the first time, sees the shop with grown-up eyes and is like, okay. Suddenly, Marvelous Jim pops up from behind the counter. Think a smaller version of Hagrid with a vest, red sparkly bow tie, and a neatly trimmed beard. Greetings, magicians. How might I help you on your journey through the illusionary arts? Mike says that they're looking for some beginner's tricks, and Marvelous Jim ducks behind the counter. Suddenly, it sounds like there's a cartoon going on. Horns are honking, there's rattles and sproings, and finally, Jim pops up with the classic disappearing pocket watch in a hanky trick. The trick is visibly bad, as I can totally see the watch swaying from an interior pocket, but... What did you think of that trick?
I'd be like, oh, I'm not buying anything from this store after he did that. Like, you're the proprietor and that's the best you got, sir? No, thank you.
I'm surprised that it didn't inspire you to quit the podcast and become a magician.
Well, there's still time. Oh, I mean, okay. We're not done with the podcast. Who knows? It could still sway my heart, my magical corazon.
But Noah is wowed. He's all in. Marvelous Jim asks him his name, and he says Noah. And Marvelous Jim starts rattling off potential magician names. Noah the Nifty. Nah. Noah the Ne'er-do-well. Nope. Aha! Noah the Nimble. Not the greatest magician name, in my opinion, personally, but...
No.
When you have Marvelous Jim naming you, I mean, what do you really expect? Come with me, young
man.
Something better? Right. I have just the thing for you. Noah the Nimble and Marvelous Jim walk off. Mike looks on bemused and glances around the cluttered shop when his eyes catch on an elf costume and ding! Suddenly... he's got an idea. But we don't get to see that idea right away because the next moment we find ourselves in Andy's office. Her computer is blowing up with notifications. What in the fuck is going on? She thinks to herself. She sees the link everyone is talking about and clicks on it. Why, there's Handsome Justice with a Santa hat. This holiday season, don't settle for a car with a giant ribbon on it. Buy a house and put an even bigger ribbon on it. Give yourself the gift of a realtor who will make your dreams come true. The camera pulls out and he is obviously in the Christmas house. Behind him is a tableau of fluffed garland, nutcrackers, and Christmassy scenes. Andy Cruz Holmes, come home for the holidays. The camera pulls out further and right next to him on the table is a large red plate with a dozen beautiful Christmas tree cookies. Handsome Justice turns to grab a cookie when suddenly Noah the Elf pops up from behind him and points an accusing finger. Hey, those are for Santa. You're out of order. Handsome Justice puts the cookie down and says, sustained. Andy chuckles at the ridiculousness of it all and has some secret warm fuzzy feelings towards Mike.
A little later, Noah shows up at the Christmas house, knocks on the door, and Mom answers. She compliments him on his magician's hat, which is a black top hat with a little flourish of holly tucked into the side, and invites him in. He produces a bouquet of flowers from his sleeve for her. Ugh. He has been bitten by the magic bug.
Ugh.
Inside, he auditions in front of the parents and Mike. While Noah's doing his trick, Dad gazes at Mom with a wistful look in his eyes, and he finally gets his flashback back. He remembers back in the soft focus day being impressed by Mike's magic at such a young age, just like Noah. A 10-ish-year-old Mike is performing tricks for his dad in the living room. He notices Andy making a snowman outside the window and gets little pre-adolescent hearts in his eyes. As Dad gives words of encouragement, really pursue it, son, and get a partner because magic should be shared with everyone, just like Christmas. We return to present day. Everyone is uber impressed by Noah's magic tricks, too, and he gets the gig at the Christmas house show, much to his delight.
Yay! Yay, go Noah!
A little while later, Mike and Andy are sitting on the living room floor, finally getting that garland fluffed.
Ooh, they're fluffing
the
together.
Right way. Left, right, up, down, fluffing together.
You know the couple that fluffs together stays together, right?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that? Okay. We need to put that on a shirt.
Hashtag Hallmark wisdom.
When Mike asks how she liked the video. Video? She asks. What video? And Mike looks at her in disbelief. The one I posted for your real estate agency. I put it on social media. It got like 100,000 views. Oh, yeah, that video, she answers. It was cute, but, you know, it would have been nice if the face of the business was my own.
She has a point.
Yeah, she has a very good point. Fair, he answers, but this was just to get attention. I mean, we could do the next one together. The next one? She scoffs. How about this? I will have my people call your people if I want your help. Mike laughs at her clever retort and agrees.
Later that day, Mike and Brandon are talking in front of the house as they put more lights up. Mike asks Brandon if he thinks Mom and Dad are acting weird. Brandon thinks he's being paranoid and manufacturing something that isn't there, possibly to distract himself so he doesn't have to deal with his relationship with Andy. Brandon says, that situation has second chance written all over it. Mike responds, how can you have a second chance when you never had a first one?
Yeah.
Brandon quickly retorts, maybe it's your second chance at a first chance then. Try and be more in the moment, he says. And then he helps him be more in the moment by throwing light bundles at him. Mike uses a 3-foot molded plastic Santa to deflect one bundle, but realizing he's in a no-win situation, he flees yelling, Mom! As Brandon laughs playfully behind him. Oh, little brothers. I love the whole little brother, older brother sibling thing they have going on. It's so good.
It's so funny, though, how, like, Brandon's kind of, like, the antagonist behind it all. Like, he's kind of the meanish brother, which, Corinne's pointing at herself. Wow, can you not relate with that at all, Corinne?
I lived to antagonize my older sister. I'd be like, poke, 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 poke.
And my older sister lived to antagonize me. So we fit, like, both ends of the spectrum.
It's later in the evening and the entire family, Noah and Andy, are in the kitchen making gingerbread houses. There is hot cocoa and everybody is having a great time. Mom looks on fondly and with a tinge of sadness from the distance. She steps outside. Mike sees her go and follows. There he finds her silently weeping, looking at the Christmas mouse. Mike says, hey. Mom wipes her tears away, gathers herself together and says, remember, we used to hide her all around the house during Christmas, and I had another for school and would hide her in a different classroom every day when I was principal. Mom is having a hard time transitioning from working to not. It's so strange to drive by the school and know someone else is in my office watching over the students. Mike tries to placate his mom. It must be nice to have a break after working so hard for so many years. She looks up at him with tears in her eyes. That's the thing. I'm not on a break. This is my forever. Your dad made retiring look easy, but now I'm at a loss. When we were both working and raising kids, we had a common goal we were working towards. And now I feel like we don't have anything holding our relationship together anymore. Mike looks at his mom sympathetically and says softly, is that why you're selling the house? So you and dad can have a fresh start? Mom looks at him, tired of the facade, and says honestly, we need some perspective, so we're moving to separate places after the holidays. Please don't mention that you know to Brandon or Dad. Mike has so many feelings, but finally has an answer to those feelings of something's not right because, well, something hasn't been right. He loves his mom, wants her to be happy, and says, I'm sorry, Mom, and gives her a big hug. Suddenly, everything shorts out, and things start catching on fire in the front yard. It's chaos. Onlookers scurry away. Children scream. Dad runs outside with a fire extinguisher, squashing the flames. They are plunged into darkness and bathed in what the fuck do we do now? It's the next day, there's still no electricity, and Brandon and Mike are talking with each other about if they should cancel the Christmas house. Ultimately, they conclude that it means too much to their parents. Brandon says, we'll figure it out. We can't cancel the Christmas house. Suddenly, the lights flicker on, and Dad gives a triumphant, yeah! Jake has fixed the electricity for now and they can always bring in a backup generator if need be. Mike is inspired. Dad, make a list of all the people you can get supplies from. Check it twice. Handsome one and two, you're on cleanup duty and I'll get started on repairs. We've got this. Mom looks at Mike and walks towards him with her whistle. She hands it to him, and the family cringes as the transfer of power has been shifted to Mike. And you know he's going to blow that whistle all the time. I wouldn't leave you with a whistle, Tam. You would be like, brood, 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 brood. It'd be like a drumline going on.
The power that I would wield with that whistle. Yeah. One of my jobs, I had a walkie-talkie, and they had to tell me to calm down, or they were going to take it away, because anything that I have that can make noise, I'm going to utilize and probably abuse at some point. So whistles are included in that.
Mike looks touched, and Brandon looks concerned. Don't you dare, Brandon says, pointing an accusatory finger. Suddenly, tweet, the whistle is blown full force, and Mike gets a power-hungry smile on his face.
Yes, 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 yes.
I feel like you're very much the Mike character in this movie, and I'm very much the Brandon. Brandon and Jake are out in the front yard, which is all fucked and full of burnt display items and broken bulbs, when Andy approaches and lets them know that she and her mom are looking forward to having their family over later that day to make Christmas tamales. And I say, yes, please, to that.
Dad and Mom are back in the house, and Dad produces a list.
Did he check it twice?
He's going to find out who's naughty and nice.
Sorry, could not help myself.
It's okay. I have a list of people that we can ask to borrow decorations from. Can you think of anyone else? How about the Kendricks, she offers. But Dad says, oh, no, they moved to Florida 3 months ago. Mom gets a wounded look in her eyes. You didn't tell me that. Dad's taken aback. It's not like I didn't tell you on purpose. You were always just so busy with your work. We used to tell each other everything, she accuses. We used to be in sync, and we're not anymore. Dad realizes that the miscommunication is because he is retired and she wasn't, and offers, maybe you can fill up your time with things you enjoy like I did. I mean, we got the boys here, and in spite of half of our decorations being destroyed, a small fire in the front yard and the impending threat of electricity going out, this is shaping up to be a perfectly perfect Christmas. Can we both just enjoy it? Yes, she whispers, but a perfect Christmas is not going to solve all of our problems.
True.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I was like, what, your definition of perfect is a little bit fucked, sir.
But I also am like, hey, Mom, why don't you communicate your feelings explicitly towards your husband? This may help to make it so you both are on the same page.
Maybe. That's a banner idea, Corinne. That night, everyone files over to Andy's mom, Elena's house next door. Her house is also decked out in Christmas decorations. She's in a large kitchen with dark wood cabinets making tamales with Noah. Mike comes in and he hugs and kisses her on the cheek, and there's greetings all around. Brandon and Jake joyously tear open their coats to Andy to reveal complimentary Christmas aprons that they've brought over for just the occasion.
Aww.
The moms look on. It's been a while since they were all together. Even though they're big, Elena says, they still feel like kids to me. Mike and Andy tell Noah that when they were his age, they were not allowed to spread the masa. You were too messy, Elena defends. Always too busy making each other laugh. Oh, yes, Andy agrees. And tamales are a serious business. That's not how it was in my house, because on the few occasions that Tamara's family made tamales, it was all hands on deck, and I didn't want to help but was recruited anyway, so I would have gladly laughed and fucked around if it would get me out of spreading masa on corn husks.
While I think that tamales are delicious and I understand how it's tradition, my desire to actually make tamales from scratch is zero. My desire to eat tamales that have been made from scratch, much higher.
I am such like a conscientious consumer with everything except for tamales. I will buy tamales off the shadiest ass looking motherfucker in a dark parking lot at midnight because that's the only place I can find them. They have dinner, and at the end, Elena presents a platter of banuelos, which are round Mexican donuts.
and spicy hot chocolate. I haven't had this in forever, Mike admits, and Andy teasingly says that's because the last time you did, you sneezed for an hour from the chili powder. Yes, Dad adds, you were so upset because you thought you'd sneeze forever. Mike's parents say that last part in unison. Are they syncing back up? Is the Christmas house healing the hurts? Mike thanks Elena for all the delicious food, and she says, anything for my favorite TV star. Don't let that get to your head, Andy interrupts. Ooh. She's also very fond of cat videos. And I'm also happy, Elena adds, that the Christmas house is back. I can't wait to see it. We can't wait either, Mike's parents agree. And Dad gets excited about the planning, and Mom gets super reflective and looks on sadly as she finishes her spicy cocoa. What's going on in that head of yours, Mama?
She's feeling isolated. Mm,
but she say something. Say something.
All by myself. Don't want to be. Oh, Mom.
Mom. After dessert, Noah falls asleep on the couch, and Mike covers him with an American flag. Okay, it's probably not an American flag, but it looked like it to me because it was red and white striped.
Like a candy cane, supposed to be perhaps? A candy.
No, I was going to say that. Like, it's supposed to be a candy cane, but it totally red flagged to me. Somebody else look at this and tell me I'm wrong.
I will tell you you're wrong, but I love you.
It's like you could see that the little blue part is tucked away at the top that they didn't want to show it. So it just was like, if you put the red and the white, it could be candy cane.
I'm going to have to take a little look-see.
Andy sees this and comments, he's really getting into the magic. And Mike asks, did he ask Rose to be his partner yet? And she says, not yet, but Mike knows he will. He just has to work up the nerve. Do you remember, Andy asks, our first performance on the Christmas stage? Mike chuckles. He did the disappearing watch trick and accidentally lost Mr. Nicholson's watch. For months, I thought I had magical powers, he says, until the snow melted and I found it in our front yard months later. Oof. I believed it too, Andy says nostalgically. I hoped the magic was real. I'm glad you decided to stick around to be my partner even after that. She agrees and they have a sweet little moment before her phone pings. And it's an email from Gail Serling, her arch nemesis in the real estate world.
Ba-ba-ba.
What do I do? Andy asks. Write her back, Mike offers. But after Andy opens the email, she realizes it's just Gail probing for info on how she knows the star of Handsome Justice. She must have seen the video, and Mike gives her his best Handsome Justice smirk as she covers her face in embarrassment.
It's the next day, and Mike is sitting in his room looking at a pencil case-sized wooden box with a necklace in it. Suddenly, it's a flashback back to the oldest looking high schoolers I've ever seen since the original 90210. Teenage Mike and Andy are at a Christmas party. They approach each other smiling nervously. Mike has a black suit on with a red bow tie. Hanging from the ceiling between them is some mistletoe. Andy is wearing a cute red dress that no teenager would actually be wearing, but whatever. Everybody else is in like jeans and letter jackets.
I know. I had a question. I'm like, he's wearing a bow tie and she's wearing this like fancy schmancy dress. I'm like, were they performing? Because everybody else is in like Letterman jackets and flannels and hoodies. I was so confused.
They're just like doing their thing and being themselves, which is great.
He's a magician. Dress up.
So he's got to have the bow tie just like Marvelous Jim has a bow tie too.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Imagine if he wore the cape to the party. Magnificent Mike has arrived.
Hanging from the ceiling between them is some mistletoe, but Mike doesn't notice because he only has eyes for Andy and is very nervous about the romantic, magical gesture he's about to do. And if you say romantic and magical in the same sentence, not romantic, just FYI. Teenage Mike holds the box in front of him and says, I'm working on a trick called the Phantom Necklace. Andy says, cool. And glances up at the mistletoe, hopefully. He opens the box, but it's not working like it should. He turns around wordlessly to fix the trick, and Andy gets approached by a football player and walks off. When he turns around, he sees Andy across the room with the football player. Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal! Instead of having a phantom necklace, he had a phantom Andy. Mike moves out of the flashback back into present day. And there in the box is the beautiful necklace. It's a silver snowflake on a thin silver chain. Suddenly, his reverie is broken when his mom pops through the door with a reindeer headband for him to wear. Apparently, today antlers are mandatory.
Ooh.
Those headbands, man, they'll hurt your head. I can't do it. I love some good antlers or animal ears or whatever, but my tender head cannot deal with the force of those headbands. Next, we see Mom and Mike downstairs with their antlers on. Andy and Noah are over because Andy has some good news. There's an interested buyer. He's local and specifically loves the Christmas house.
Mm-hmm.
So I can take him on a walkthrough, or you can wait. Tam's got a look on her face because she knows.
Oh, God. I know.
Mike is nonplussed, and Noah wanders off to look at one of the Christmas house rooms. Mike follows, and Noah says to him, "You're so lucky to live here," as he looks into a room. The room has a wide path through the center, leading up to the fireplace, which has stockings and garland galore on it. Flanked on either side are large Christmas trees, fake snow, lights everywhere, several Santa figures, and the pièce de résistance, a 5-foot rotating display with a drum as the base and 3 white bears, each bouncing on top of each other. It's truly hideous, and also very much reminds me of Christmas in the Park. Later, Mike and Brandon are out in the front, fixing the fucked front yard. Mike aggressively throws down a display piece. Brandon asks, "Is everything okay?" Mike knows that something is up. He says, "Everything feels weird and wrong, and you and Jake are hiding something. Being around Andy makes me feel like I don't even want to go back to LA. And where in the fuck is the Christmas magic?" Brandon teases Mike, "You caught the feels." Mike is irritated and responds, "How are you so calm? Things are literally on fire." Brandon turns towards his brother. "I'm calm because I've come so close to being a dad 3 times, only to have it whisked away at the last moment. We're waiting to hear about another adoption, but haven't wanted to let anyone know because of the unpredictability of it all. I've had to learn to let things fall apart and pick up and keep going. You realize it may be shitty, but you'll get through it. Maybe it's time to crack open your journal and write some angsty poems about the girl next door." Mike looks nonplussed. "You read my journal?" Brandon, being a good little brother, says, "Of course I did." Mike chuckles and says, "You're going to be a great dad." And they have a really nice hug. And it's not a bro hug where they like clasp each other and then they pound each other's backs. Like, it's a firm hug. A real, real hug. So nice.
Dad walks in on Mom in the kitchen. "There's a buyer coming over now," he asks. "It's just a walkthrough," she says. "But what if they make an offer?" And Mom says nonchalantly, "Then we'll discuss it." "Everything's happening so fast," Dad cries. "Only to you," Mom argues. "I am knee-deep in the planning while you're off doing all your things with all of your friends."
Ooh.
"Are you upset because I'm seeing friends taking yoga and hiking?" he asks. "No," she shakes her head. "You are changing your life, and I want those kinds of changes, too. Us moving apart is just the first step." The doorbell rings, and it's Marvelous Jim and Andy. He's the potential buyer. He walks in with all the gravitas, sees Mike, and bows. "We meet again." He turns to the fully decked-out living room and says, "Ah, the famed Christmas house. I have admired this place for some time. How fortuitous that it's on the market. Enchanting."
How in the fuck can Marvelous Jim with his janky-ass magic shop afford a fucking huge-ass house?
I don't know, because later he drives away in his shitty little orange VW bug, and I'm like, oh, honey, this guy can't afford the house, but he does, spoiler alert, make a cash offer at one point, so I don't fucking know. An inheritance?
Possibly.
He stole it magically from a bank?
Ta-da! Your money is gone!
I wondered the same thing. Andy offers to start the tour, and Mike wants to tag along. As they walk through, Mike fabricates some problems with the house, much to Andy's dismay. Oh, over here, there's a huge pipe leak. And if you really get in there, you can smell all the mold. And I hope you like ghosts. Andy, fed up with his sabotage, asks him to stay in the kitchen and finishes the tour without him. At the end of the tour, Marvelous Jim is really feeling the place and admits, "Being inside was like Christmas catharsis." He says he will be in touch and jumps into his tacky old orange VW bug, which
just hence brings Curran's question back around of how the hell he can afford this house.
At this point, we have seen a lot of the interior of the fully decorated Christmas house. Are you like, wow?
There's moments in time where I'm like, ugh. But then at the end, when they actually have the kids come through, they do a pretty good job. I was pleasantly surprised because I was ready to rip it apart. And I'm like, yeah, it's not as bad as I thought it would be, but it's not great. It looks like Christmas hurled all over the house. Andy finds Mike in the front yard making decoration adjustments and asks, ghosts? Really? Just because you heard a voice in the middle of the night when you were 11? Yeah, he argues. Everyone else was asleep. How do you explain that? It could have been 50 other things before it was a ghost. And I am not going to steer your parents into a bad deal. Don't you trust me? Mike realizes that his bad behavior was a knee-jerk reaction to all the changes, apologizes, and asks, do you want me to call Marvelous Jim and tell him the mold is non-existent? No. Andy says, but you can tell him you waved your magic wand and made it disappear.
Ha ha!
Now, if you'll excuse me, I am going to have a glass of wine that is as big as my head. Mike asks, you want some company? And she says, yeah, that'd be nice. And they go off to have a glass of wine together.
I am like, you are buying all the wine and all the things because you were all the pains in the asses.
Yes, 100%. You're going to buy me the glass of wine that's as big as my head, no matter how expensive it is, Mike.
Exactly. Mike and Andy are at an Italian restaurant, and Mike impresses Andy with his ability to make a penny disappear.
Wow, so impressive.
She says, I can't believe you didn't make it big in Vegas. Mike responds, a real loss for showbiz, I know. Andy continues, I did wonder, I thought we were doing magic together, and then suddenly you were gone. Mike looks at her. You were moving on with Troy Parker, so I figured it was time for me to do so as well. Andy looks confused and says, Troy Parker? And I'm like, you dated the fucker. Why are you saying Troy Parker like you don't even know who he is?
Troy, well, it rings a bell vaguely. I mean, Troy. Oh, yes.
Mike tells Andy the flashback from his point of view, ending with her being across the room with Troy, and then he became your boyfriend. And he shrugs. That was that. Andy, realizing he was just a clueless idiot back then, lets a bit more of her facade crack. I have a confession, too. I actually love Handsome Justice, especially the episode where you defend the dog. Mike is delighted. Andy looks down at her phone and has got to run. She has some real estate biz to attend to. We next see her in her tastefully Christmas-decorated office with the... which Tamara and I very much differ on, with Mike's mom and dad. Marvelous Jim wants to make an offer, but it's got an expiration date. What would you like to do, says Andy. Dad looks at her, has finally resigned himself to the whole situation, and says, let's put the house on the market. Mom is a bit shocked, agrees with him, but looks like she has a twinge of regret.
That's kind of a dick move to put a time limit on the offer. Marvelous Jim, I didn't expect that from you, buddy.
Well, he's a magician. He is full of surprises.
Okay. Back at the Christmas house, Mike gets a call from the show producer with the blazer. She's in New York meeting with the network and urges him to meet her there so they can both plead the case of the show. But she is surprisingly blazerless in this scene and instead is decked out in a tan pea coat. But perhaps there is a blazer underneath.
Ooh.
This is the only time she could get a meeting with the executives. Christmas Eve. He looks conflicted. He wants to go, but that would mean missing a lot of the festivities. Mike, she presses, having you here will make all the difference. So he finally agrees. And his mom, who's listening behind him, protests, you have to work on Christmas Eve? Mike knows it's shitty, but reassures her that he will only be gone for like half the day. He'll be back on the train by 5 p.m. No one will even miss me. She shakes her head, but what are you gonna do? He has to go save his show. Justice needs to be served, handsome style, and he's the only one that could do it.
Ooh, nice.
In the meantime, the show must go on. Mike, Brandon, Jake, and Andy are in front of the house, setting up a pretty big stage. There's scaffolding and platforms strewn about. They need it, Mike says, for the magicians and the band. Brandon adds, and just when I thought the Christmas house couldn't get any Christmas housier. Wait a second, Andy interrupts. Did you say magicians, plural? Yep, Mike confirms, for one night only. Awesome Andy and magnificent Mike on stage together, assisting Nimble Noah, of course. Next, we see Mike and Noah practicing magic tricks next door. Noah does a flawless card trick, and Mike says, "Well done! Excellent utility prop work," as he pulls his chosen card out of a gift box that was pulled out of a stocking. Noah's nervous, but Mike gives him a pep talk and says, "It's okay to be nervous. I still get nervous before performing, but nervous is a lot like being excited, so just be excited instead." Noah agrees, and Andy comes in and tells him to start getting ready for dinner. He leaves, and Mike shares that her son is gonna kill it at the Christmas show. And she divulges that Noah has been happier in the last couple of weeks because of the magic and Mike. And she appreciates him spreading so much joy.
Or Magic Mike.
I know. I was trying so hard not to say that. That sentence, all of them, don't say Magic Mike. Don't say Magic Mike. Don't say Magic Mike.
Why? Why? You gotta say Magic Mike.
"I try," he says. "Sometimes I don't execute it very well, but that is always my goal, to spread joy." Andy takes this moment to finally thank him for posting that video for her real estate business, and Mike admits that he should have asked her permission first. And she just says, "Next time," and walks away, leaving Mike to return home, where he finds his dad stringing some lights and asks if he needs help. "Hey," his dad answers, "just like old times, you returning from dinner with the Cruises, me working in the yard? Yeah, there's some lights over there. Why don't you grab them?" But before Mike does, he tells his dad how much Noah is taking to magic and says, "It made me realize how much time and energy you must have put into magic to teach me way back in the day." "Oh, I loved it," Dad admits. And Mike, in turn, admits that he talked to Mom and knows about the separation. Dad confirms this and realizes that people change over time. They should change, but in all of my changes, he admits, "I was so caught up in the new things going on that I didn't pay attention to the things that were already there. The most important things, like family and my wife." Dad gets a little misty-eyed. Mike asks if he's okay, and he says, "Yeah, I'll be fine. Now, are you going to help me with these lights or what?" The moment has been lightened, and they continue with the task at hand.
Andy's over at her house and sees the framed photo of teenage Mike and Andy before they left for the Christmas party. Now we get to see them flashback, back, from her point of view. Andy, in her red dress, motions Mike over to the mistletoe. They smile shyly at each other, and he excitedly talks to her about his new trick, showing her the box. He opens the box, she looks inside, and it's empty. He closes the box and reopens it, but no necklace. He's looking down, shaking the box, and she moves forward to give him a kiss. Just as she's about to make contact, he flips around to fix the box, turning his back on her advance. "Curse your sudden, inevitable betrayal and kisses interrupt us all rolled up in one!" She looks hurt.
"No!"
Backs away and walks off with the football player that approached her. Later that day, Mike is coaching Noah while Andy watches in their front yard on stage when he gets a text. A disappointed look crosses his face. Andy says, "Is something wrong?" Mike assures her he's fine, but, "I was hoping tomorrow's meeting would be in the morning, but they said it in the afternoon." "It'll be fine, though," Noah chimes in. "Mike promised me he'll be here, so I'm not worried." "Oh, Noah, we pat you on the head. Sometimes there are things that are just kind of unavoidable." "Oh, but we love your optimism." And Noah and Andy walk off to go home. Later that evening over dinner, Jake gets a call and leaves the table. Once he leaves, Mom says, "I found a house I adore in Annandale by the Hudson River. It's just perfect, and it's a fixer-upper." She glances over at Dad. "And I've asked my favorite contractor, winky winky, if he would help." It looks like Mom and Dad found a common goal after all. Both of them look pleased as punch. Suddenly, Jake walks back into the dining room and looks at Brandon. They talk silently with their eyes. I'm going to translate what they're saying with their eyes. Jake says, "I heard from the adoption people it's a go." Brandon says, "Don't play games with my heart." His eyes well with tears. Jake says, "I'm not." Brandon springs from his seat, and Jake and Brandon hug. Mom and Dad look confused, and Brandon exclaims, "We're having a baby!"
What?
Jake says, "Our adoption is finalized, and our little boy is coming home. Everybody is thrilled. Group hug! Yay!" The next afternoon, Mike, dressed in a dapper suit, is waiting in a posh lobby with his producer. There's a modern gas fireplace in the center, tasteful Christmas decor, and the floor buffer guy has just passed by. It's Christmas Eve, and he wants to go the fuck home. Mike looks at his watch and then to his producer. I know this meeting is important, but we've been waiting an hour and I've got a train to catch. Just then, they're called into the meeting. They find out that they're not canceled, that the guy who wanted to cancel Handsome Justice is gone. He somehow met an untimely demise, and the last words out of his mouth were, "Mike!" But we just can't figure out what happened. So we're happy to continue with Handsome Justice. We just need to freshen it up. The producer starts spitballing ideas, and Mike starts thinking about Andy in slow motion with a soft focus. Eventually, he interrupts. "I'm sorry, but I've got to go. I'm grateful to everyone and love the show, but this isn't where I'm supposed to be tonight. I need to be with the people I love." And with that, he dashes out. And that's what I say, too, when my boss man is like, "So, what's your schedule going to be like around Christmas time?" And I'm like, "Christmas Eve? No. I will not be at work. You do what you want."
That night, the Christmas house is in full swing. Woo! And again, I just have to revisit because they did all of that prep work for one night on Christmas Eve into Christmas Day. Are you freaking kidding me?
Do you not think Christmas is important? Are you saying that like magical Christmas Eve experiences aren't worth their 2 weeks of moving an entire household? I mean, come on.
Yes.
Let's get your priorities straight.
It's a little anticlimactic because it's all the buildup and little beep. That's it. It's over. Put everything back. That night, the Christmas house is in full swing. There are crowds of people on the lawn. Dad and Brandon are passing out hot cocoa, wishing everybody a Merry Christmas. Mom opens the door to reveal the inside of the house and invites all the kiddos to come in. They do, and not a surface has been untouched. Every corner of the house looks like Christmas spewed all over it. The kids ooh and ah as they explore. There are trees and decorations, fake snow and animatronics. There are toys and trains and snowflakes. Back outside, the party is in full swing as we see inexplicably Marvelous Jim the Magician at the DJ booth spinning Christmas records. Andy and Noah are amidst all the hubbub prepping for Noah's show, and he asks if Mike will make it on time. Of course, Andy assures him, he wouldn't miss this for the world. She shoos him off to go play just as Marvelous Jim the magical DJ enters. He looks at his pocket watch and says, "Time's up." And he is ready to make a bid on the Christmas house with an all-cash offer.
Mm.
And you're just not seeing that Marvelous Jim being the DJ as anything out of the ordinary? Am I alone on that?
Marvelous Jim is a Renaissance man. He's got many talents.
Okay. Andy goes back inside and presents the offer to the family in the kitchen. Sans Mike, who hasn't arrived yet. They are floored. They got such a good offer right off the bat. Andy says this may not be the only one tonight. The family is flabbergasted, and she asks if anybody has heard from Mike. We cut to Mike yelling, "Taxi!" On a deserted dark street, he is trying really hard to get home in time. And it's also nearing time for Noah's big show as he is on the stage behind the curtain, stealing his nerves or excitement. Mom and Andy look on, and Mom says, "It feels like just yesterday that you and Mike were doing that." "Oh, yeah," Andy answers. "And if you told me I would be back here putting on a magic show at the Christmas house, I wouldn't have believed you." "Well, life is full of surprises," Mom agrees, "but we just have to see where they take us." Really, Mom? You weren't just saying that like earlier in the movie. Just then, Mike sneaks up behind Noah in a very fabulous sequined blue cape.
"Ooh,
are you ready?" he asks. And Noah says, "Mike," excitedly, but also with a sigh of relief, "he made it." Mike goes onto the stage and grandly announces, "Everybody, gather around for the show!" The yard is full of neighbors and friends, seated around stage and clad in winter gear against the cold night. He introduces Noah the Nimble, and they both tag team Christmas-themed magic tricks to the delight of the audience. For the final trick, they need some assistance. Noah goes into the audience and selects a girl who I'm assuming is that Rose person.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because they never specify. And Mike asks Andy if she wouldn't mind assisting. She says sure. Drops her coat to reveal an even more sparkly gold dress that puts Mike's fabulous cape to shame.
Ooh.
They make their way onto stage as Mom looks on delighted and Marvelous Jim gives them a thumbs up. The grand finale trick includes a disappearing box. Mike and Andy are ushered inside as Noah and Rose spin it around. Inside the box in very close quarters, Mike and Andy are whispering. Andy said, "I'm so glad you could make it," when a disembodied voice says, "Keep it down, I'm trying to get into character." The box goes round and round on stage, and when the door opens, there instead of Andy and Mike stands Santa Claus.
Ooh.
He
ho, ho, ho's and wishes everyone a Merry Christmas to the cheers of the audience. And just then, like a little bit of Christmas magic, it starts to snow.
Not to give away any tricks or anything, but Andy and Mike dash out the back of the Transformo contraption and go into the house. As soon as the door is closed, Mike says, "I have one more trick." He opens the much-famed Phantom necklace box, and it's empty inside. Ooh. She looks inside and says, "Ooh, should I say some magic words?" He responds, "Couldn't hurt." She looks at him with heart eyes and an open face. Christmas lights twinkle all around her. "I don't want you to move back to L.A., she says. Those are some powerful magic words. Mike smiles a half smile and with butterflies in his stomach says, "I'm not." He looks down at that danged necklace box, waves his fingers across the top, and opens it to reveal the necklace inside. Andy gasps and gets a beautiful big smile on her face. He says, "May I?" "Good consent, Mike. Good consent." And she says, "You may." She turns around, lifts up her hair, and he fastens the very tasteful snowflake necklace around her neck. Andy, curious, asks, "So what happened at the meeting?" Mike, fully in the Kiss tractor beam, says, "I don't know. I realized what I really wanted was right here, so I left before I found out." Suddenly, we flash back. We see the teenage versions of them smiling at each other. They glance up at the mistletoe, and now we're back in the present. Mike and Andy tilt their heads towards each other and kiss. And it's lovely, and it's sweet, and I'm here for it.
It was not dry at all.
No, it was delightful.
Everyone is still enjoying the Christmas house and the holiday spirits are high when Santa, a.k.a. Dad, finds Mom in the front yard. They are full on feeling the holiday feels. Mom was surprised by the Santa reveal and Dad mischievously says, "I am full of surprises." She takes a deep breath and sighs. "This is the feeling I was looking for." Santa Dad reaches down into his bag and pulls out a snow globe. It's a replica of their Christmas house.
Wow.
So no matter where they go, they will always have it with them. "We're in this together," Santa Dad says. "Forever." Mom nods, pulls down his beard, and kisses him square on the mouth.
I think that he may have pulled down his beard, but regardless, don't ever pull down Santa's beard in front of children. No! Don't do that!
Don't do that.
I mean, they're Christmas house owners. They do what they want.
Ugh.
Santa Dad puts his beard back up and says, "I got a lot of stops to make." "Bye, Santa," she says playfully as he hurries off. Jake and Brandon are having a snowball fight. The kids are playing in the falling snow. The night was a total success. The next morning, Mom is baking cinnamon rolls, and the family and Andy are gathered around the table. "I'm sorry to say that we didn't get any offers on the house," Andy says. "What about Marvelous Jim?" Dad asks. "Well," Andy admits, "he had a change of heart. I guess you can say his offer magically disappeared."
Oof.
"However, there was something that came through this morning, and I think you'll be pleased." She slides a folder over to Mom, who puts on her reading glasses, and her head shoots up.
"You?"
Mom says to Mike. "You want to buy the house?" "Yep," Mike admits. Jake and Brandon, who are in the kitchen, come in a little closer to get the tea. Mike shares that Handsome Justice has a spinoff that is based out of New York, so he can commute. And he adds, "The life I want to come home to at the end of the day is right here. And besides, someone has to keep this all going." "Offer accepted," Mom shouts happily as everyone congratulates him, and Andy goes off to finalize the paperwork. He stops her before she leaves, and they share another Christmas kiss in the entryway.
Ooh.
Then we have a happily ever after montage. Brandon and Jake with their super cute, adorable adopted baby. Mom and Dad hiking together. Everyone around the familial table sharing a holiday meal. Mike, Andy, and Noah inside the Christmas house in all its glory, looking at a photo album laughing. And amidst this happily ever after and my warm fuzzies, I was slightly disturbed as the camera panned out. It showed outside of Mike's house and the window, and hanging just visible was a pocket watch off of an animatronic Santa's hand.
Ew.
Whose watch was that? I believe it was Marvelous Jim.
Ew.
And why the fuck was that the last thing we saw in the movie?
I did not notice that. That is creepy, creepy.
Yes.
Creepy.
It's like somebody was sending a message to Mike and his family, like, I'm watching you and I'm doing it in a semi-stalkery way. I'm going to hang my watch right here so you know I came.
Now,
after the movie ends, we think it's all over. We're trying to shake off the nasty feels that we got from that hanging pocket watch in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a nice little Easter egg. Handsome Justice Clint is in a suit with his hair slicked back. He smiles at the camera and says, this Christmas, give the gift of Grift body spray because even Santa wants to smell nice. He smirks at the camera, and that's all, folks.
Aww.
Movie is done.
Yay!
Oof. My goodness, that was a ride. Corinne, what do you give Christmas House?
I would give it 3 stars. Because the plot is all over the fucking place. There's a strong magic plot line, which I hate. And I actually don't find the romantic relationship between Mike and Andy compelling in the least. And I'm not all that interested in what's going on with Mom and Dad. That having been said, the gay plot line in this, it's a strong secondary plot line. And it is delightful. And they are adorable together. They're married. They're trying to get a family together. They have a really nice kiss. And the eyebrows, I'm in love. Yeah, so it gets 4. Yeah.
4. Wow. Okay.
Saved by the gays.
Saved by the gays. I'm giving it 3.5. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
That's a better rating.
The mom and dad storyline was just like, what the fuck, Mom? Like, seriously, all this stuff that you're, like, pinning on Dad and you want to end the relationship over seems pretty, I don't want to say minor, because that's, like, belittling whatever she's supposed to be feeling. But I just thought it was a little out of context. The actions did not...
All she needed to do was communicate her feelings to him, and he would invite her along to the things he was doing, or she would say, I would rather do this, and he would do it. So it's not like it was a big deal. Right. But
it was a mystery. Yeah, the consequences that she was putting on the table just did not match the actions that he was doing. That's why the whole time I'm like, did he cheat on her? She keeps referring to all these people that he's spending all this time with. Is one of them a woman that he's doing inappropriate things with? Because this is just not matching in my head.
No.
Andy and Mike, although they had a lovely kiss that I loved a lot, that their rapport was just like they could have been buddies, they could have been friends. I did not feel the sizzle between them.
I felt the sizzle between me and Mike, though. Hi!
I second that the gay couple was the most interesting and the most compelling and probably the hottest. So, storyline was all over the place. Again, raised it up a little bit because of the kiss and the gay relationship.
Yeah.
The storyline was meh.
Yeah.
It was a holiday movie. Was it a great holiday movie? No. No, it wasn't. 3.5 stars.
Your rating is more accurate. Mine is just because I thought that they're like the gay couple's relationship was so fucking cute. I could not help but bump it up an entire star. If you have thoughts about what we should have rated the Christmas House, please let us know at onedrykiss@gmail.com.
If you have any movies that you would like us to cover, we're also open to that. So please also email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. If you liked what you hear, we would appreciate you rating and reviewing our show, just like this one that Corinne's about to read to you.
La Silvia Isma gave us 5 stars, and she said, absolutely hilarious recounting of Hallmark movies and those in that genre type. The hosts have great rapport and banter. Really fun. Thank you. We appreciate your rating and review.
Also, we are on all the social medias at One Dry Kiss, one spelled O-N-E. On Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, look for those little tidbits that we promised you at the middle of the show.
Our next movie is going to be, I'm so excited. It's tie time.
Of course it is.
And Kelly Pickler in The Mistletoe Secret.
Our 3rd movie in Christmas in July, is that right?
Yes, it is.
We hope you're feeling that holiday spirit with us. We hope you join us next week as we cover that movie. And as always, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah.
See you next time.
See you next time.
The Secret Keeper.
Shh. Secret Keeper.